I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. Is Democracy Now!
Texas is now more red in the United States Congress.
In a major victory for President Trump, the Supreme Court rules Texas can use a new congressional map that dilutes the political power of Black and Latino voters and could help Republicans pick up five new House seats. We'll speak with Mother Jones reporter Ari Berman, who says the Roberts Court just helped Trump rig the midterms. Then immigration crackdowns continue. We'll go to New Orleans, where agents aim to make 5,000 arrests, and to Minneapolis as President Trump escalates his attacks on the Somali community there.
I don't want him in our country, I'll be honest with you. Somebody say, oh, that's not politically correct. I don't care. I don't want him in our country. Their country's no good for a reason. Their country stinks.
Weaponizing ICE to target Black Somali immigrants. This is not immigration policy. This is racism being directed from the president's office.
And finally, the U.S. blows up another boat, this one in the Pacific, as senators watch video of two September strike survivors clinging for life to a boat for more than 40 minutes, countering Secretary Hegseth's claims of fog of war. We'll speak with a lawyer for the family of another boat strike victim, this one a Colombian father of four. The family's filed the first formal challenge to the strikes.
We filed this petition before the Inter-American Commission of Human Rights on behalf of the family of Alejandro Carranza, a fisherman who was killed in the Caribbean by the United States without evidence of any wrongdoing, without trial. We want compensation for the family, and we want these killings to stop.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Gooden. The Pentagon's announced the U.S. blew up another boat in the eastern Pacific, killing four people. The Pentagon claims the boat was carrying drugs, but once again offered no proof. The U.S. has now killed at least 87 people and 22 strikes on boats since September. This comes as controversy continues to grow over a September 2nd strike when the U.S. targeted and killed two men who'd survived an initial attack. Nine were killed in the first strike. On Thursday, members of Congress were shown video of two men being killed at a time when they were clinging to the side of their overturned boat for more than 40 minutes. Democratic Representative Jim Hines of Connecticut spoke after watching the video.
What I saw in that room was one of the most troubling things I've seen in my time in public service. You have two individuals in clear distress, without any means of locomotion, with a destroyed vessel, who were killed by the United States.
Lawmakers also questioned Admiral Frank Mitch Bradley, the operations commanding officer. Many questions remain over Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's role. The Washington Post recently reported Hegseth had ordered Pentagon officials to kill everybody on the boat. This comes as the Pentagon's inspector general's released its report examining Hegseth's sharing of sensitive information about U.S. strikes in Yemen on a Signal group chat earlier this year. The report found Hegseth's actions, quote, created a risk to operational security that could have resulted in failed U.S. mission objectives and potential harm to U.S. pilots, unquote. The report also criticized Hegseth's use of a personal cell phone to conduct official business. Hegseth himself refused to cooperate with the investigation, refusing to hand over his phone or sit for an interview. Israel's military is continuing to pound the Gaza Strip in violation of the October 10th ceasefire. Al Jazeera reports Israeli ships opened fire towards the coast of Khan Yunis while air raids struck the city of Rafah. There are reports of explosions and Israeli artillery fire around Gaza City, including airstrike near the Maghazi refugee camp. Meanwhile, a CNN investigation found the Israeli military fired indiscriminately at starving Palestinians collecting sacks of flour near an aid distribution site near the Zakim crossing in June, then bulldozed their bodies into shallow, unmarked graves, with some bodies left to decompose or be partially eaten by dogs. Gaza officials and the United Nations estimate about 10,000 Palestinians remain missing from Israel's more than two-year assault, while the official death toll recently passed 70,000. Public broadcasters in Ireland, Slovenia, the Netherlands, and Spain said Thursday they'll boycott the 2026 Eurovision Song Contest after the European Broadcasting Union refused to hold a vote on whether to exclude Israel. This is Jose Pablo Lopez, president of Spain's national broadcaster.
We maintain the same position we had months ago when we said Israel's participation in the Eurovision Festival was untenable for two main reasons. Firstly, because the genocide it has perpetuated in Gaza. As president of the corporation, I keep thinking that Eurovision is a contest, but human rights are not a contest.
Eurovision is among the most popular TV and online events in the world. Last year, viewers from 156 countries cast votes for their favorite contestants. In New Jersey, protesters picketed this morning outside a Jersey City warehouse that's used to transport military cargo to Israel. A recent report by the Palestinian Youth Movement and Progressive International found the warehouse handles over 1,000 tons of Israel-bound military cargo every week, including thousands of MK-84 2,000-pound bombs that have been used to level Gaza. The U.S. Supreme Court has cleared the way for Texas to use a new congressional map designed to help Republicans pick up as many as five House seats next year. A lower court had previously ruled the redistricting plan was unconstitutional because it would likely dilute the political power of Black and Latino voters. Liberal Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan wrote in her dissent, quote, "This court's stay ensures that many Texas citizens, for no good reason, will be placed in electoral districts because of their race. And that result, as this court has pronounced year in and year out, is a violation of the Constitution." We'll have more on that story after headlines. The FBI has arrested a 30-year-old man from Virginia for allegedly planting pipe bombs near the Republican and Democratic National Committee headquarters in January 2021 on the night before the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. The suspect, Brian Cole, is expected to appear in court today. Meanwhile, the Justice Department has asked a judge to re-jail a participant in the January 6th insurrection who'd been pardoned by President Trump. The Justice Department made the request after the man, Taylor Taranto, showed up near the home of Democratic Congressmember Jamie Raskin, who served on the January 6th House Select Committee. Security has been increased for Congressmember Raskin. In October, Taranto was sentenced to time served for making a threat near the home of former President Barack Obama. A federal grand jury in Virginia has declined a second attempt by the Justice Department to indict New York Attorney General Letitia James on charges she lied in her mortgage application. In a statement, Letitia James wrote, "As I have said from the start, the charges against me are baseless. It's time for this unchecked weaponization of our justice system to stop," she said. "It's the latest defeat for President Trump's campaign of retribution against his political enemies. The Trump administration's reportedly considering a third attempt to obtain an indictment against James." In New Orleans, about 30 activists were ejected from a city council meeting Thursday after calling for ICE-free zones and asking local leaders to do more to protect immigrants. During a public comment period, members of the public went to the microphone one by one and were cut off when it became clear they wanted to speak on immigration, which wasn't on the formal agenda.
And I'm asking city council for ICE-free zones, make all city-owned property ICE-free zones, and prohibit ICE and DHS from using city property to stage their operations. No collaboration with ICE City Council must pass ordinances that codify non-collaboration between the City of New Orleans and ICE, including all of its offices.
As I said previously, that is not germane. Thank you for your comments.
The protests came as the Border Patrol announced a surge of more than 200 federal immigration agents into New Orleans, which the agency is calling Operation Catahoula Crunch. They aim to make 5,000 arrests over 2 months. We'll go to New Orleans later in the broadcast. Honduran presidential candidate Salvador Nasralla has alleged fraud after his conservative rival, Nasri Esfura, regained the lead as election officials continue to tally up votes from Sunday's election. Nasralla also accused President Trump of interfering in the race by publicly backing Esfura. Some election officials have also publicly criticized the election process. On Thursday, Marlene Ochoa, who serves on Honduras's National Electoral Council, decried what she called an electoral coup. She said, quote, I believe there's unanimity among the Honduran people that we're perhaps in the least transparent election in our democratic history, unquote. President Trump welcomed the leaders of the Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda to Washington, D.C. Thursday for the signing of an agreement aimed at ending decades of conflict in the eastern DRC. Trump also announced the U.S. had agreed to bilateral deals that will open the African nation's reserves of rare earth elements and other minerals to U.S. companies. The signing ceremony was held in the newly renamed Donald J. Trump Institute of Peace. During the event, Trump struggled to keep his eyes open. This follows other recent public appearances where Trump appeared to fall asleep a number of times. And once again, Trump was spotted wearing bandages on his right hand, which appeared bruised and swollen, covered with makeup. That fueled further speculation about the president's health. On Monday, the White House said the results from Trump's recent MRI exam were perfectly normal after Trump was unable to tell reporters aboard Air Force One what part of his body was scanned.
What part of your body was the MRI looking at?
I have no idea. It was just an MRI. What part of the body? It wasn't the brain because I took a cognitive test and I aced it. I got a perfect mark, which you would be incapable of doing. Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you, too.
In business news, Netflix has announced it'll buy Warner Brothers in a deal worth at least $72 billion. The deal could reshape the entertainment and media industry as it will give Netflix control of Warner's movie and TV studios as well as the HBO Max streaming service. In labor news, a dozen striking Starbucks workers were arrested in New York City Thursday as they blocked the doors to the Empire State Building where Starbucks has a corporate office. Starbucks workers at over 100 stores are on strike. In New Jersey, Democratic Socialist Joel Brooks and Jake Ifros have made history after winning election to the Jersey City Council. They're the first socialists elected to public office in New Jersey in over a century. This follows the historic election of Democratic Socialist Zoran Mamdani as New York City's next mayor. A University of California student's been ordered to serve 90 days in jail for breaking into a Sonoma County poultry slaughterhouse and freeing four chickens. 23-year-old Zoe Rosenberg of Berkeley received the sentence on Wednesday after a jury convicted her in October of felony conspiracy and three misdemeanor counts. She was ordered to pay more than $100,000 to Petaluma Poultry, which is owned by the agribusiness giant Purdue Farms. Rosenberg supporters with the group Direct Action Everywhere say the chickens she rescued were worth $24. They're reportedly alive and well at a sanctuary for rescued farm animals. Rosenberg told supporters her action was prompted by investigations that found routine violations of California's animal cruelty laws at Petaluma poultry slaughterhouses.
Birds among the living, that the air quality is so poor. The chickens were struggling to breathe. I myself was struggling to breathe, even with a KN95 mask, as I investigated this facility. And we have been calling on the California Attorney General to take action because the Sonoma County District Attorney's Office has made it abundantly clear that they do not care about these animals whatsoever, that they care far more about the profits of Purdue, a company that makes over $10 billion a year on the backs of these animals.
And the Trump administration has ended a policy granting visitors free access to national parks on the federal holidays, Juneteenth and Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Instead, the 116 parks that charge entrance fees will now waive admission charges on June 14th. President Trump's birthday. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A major victory for President Trump. The Supreme Court has cleared the way for Texas to use a new congressional map designed to help Republicans pick up as many as 5 House seats in next year's midterms. A lower court previously ruled the redistricting map was unconstitutional because it had been racially gerrymandered and would likely dilute the political power of Black and Latino voters. Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan wrote in her dissent, quote, "This court's stay ensures that many Texas citizens, for no good reason, will be placed in electoral districts because of their race. And that result, as this court has pronounced year in and year out, is a violation of the Constitution," Justice Kagan wrote. For more, we're joined by Ari Berman, voting rights correspondent for Mother Jones Magazine. His new piece is headlined, "The Roberts Court Just Helped Trump Rig the Midterms." Ari is the author of Minority Rule, The Right-Wing Attack on the Will of the People and the Fight to Resist It. Ari Berman, welcome back to Democracy Now! Talk about the significance of this Supreme Court decision yesterday, and what exactly was Samuel Alito's role?
Good morning, Amy, and thank you for having me back on the show. So the immediate effect is that Texas will now be able to use a congressional map that has already been found to be racially gerrymandered and could allow Republicans to pick up 5 new seats in the midterms. And remember, Texas started this whole gerrymandering arms race, where state after state is now redrawing their maps ahead of the midterms, essentially normalizing something that is deeply abnormal. It was an unsigned majority opinion, but Samuel Alito wrote a concurrence basically saying that the Texas map was a partisan map, pure and simple. And remember, Amy, the Supreme Court has already laid the groundwork for Texas to do this kind of thing by essentially saying that partisan gerrymandering cannot be reviewed in federal court, no matter how egregious it is. They have blocked racial gerrymandering in the past, but now essentially what they're allowing to do is they're allowing Texas to camouflage a racial gerrymander as a partisan gerrymander, and they've given President Trump a huge victory in his war against American democracy.
This overturned a lower court ruling. What are the role of the courts now with the Supreme Court ruling again and again on this?
Well, basically, what the Supreme Court has done is it's given President Trump the power of a king, and it's given itself the power of a monarchy, because what happens is lower courts keep striking down things that President Trump and his party do, including Trump appointees to the lower courts. The Texas redistricting map was struck down by a Trump appointee who found that it was racially gerrymandered to discriminate against Black and Latino voters. What the Roberts Court did was overturn that lower court opinion, just as it's overturned so many other lower court opinions to rule in favor of Donald Trump and his party. And one of the most staggering things, Amy, is the fact that the Roberts Court has ruled for President Trump 90% of the time in these shadow docket cases. So in all of these big issues, whether it's on voting rights or immigration or presidential powers, lower courts are constraining the president. And the Supreme Court repeatedly is saying that the president and his party are essentially above the law.
So you've talked about the Supreme Court in 2019 ruling in a case ordered that courts should stay out of disputes over partisan gerrymandering. Tell us more about that.
It was really a catastrophic ruling for democracy, because what it said is that no matter how egregiously a state gerrymanders to try to target a political party, that those claims not only can't be struck down in federal court, they can't even be reviewed in federal court. And what that has done is it said to the Texases of the world, you can gerrymander as much as you want, as long as you say that you're doing it for partisan purposes. So this whole exercise made a complete mockery of democracy, because Texas goes out there and says, we freely admit that we are drawing these districts to pick up 5 new Republican seats. President Trump says, we're entitled to 5 new seats. Now, that would strike the average American as absurd, the idea that you could just redraw maps mid-decade to give more seats to your party. But the Supreme Court has basically laid the groundwork for that to be okay. And even though racial gerrymandering, discriminating against Black and Hispanic voters, for example, is unconstitutional, which is what the lower court found in Texas, the Roberts Court continually has allowed Republicans to get away with this kind of racial gerrymandering by allowing them to just claim that it's partisan gerrymandering. And that's what happened once again in Texas.
Where does this leave the Voting Rights Act? And for people, especially young people who, you know, weren't alive in 1965, explain what it says and its importance that.
The Voting Rights Act is the most important piece of civil rights legislation ever passed by the Congress. It quite literally ended the Jim Crow regime in the South by getting rid of the literacy tests and the poll taxes and all the other suppressive devices that had prevented Black people from being able to register and vote in the South for so many years. It has been repeatedly gutted by the Roberts Court, which has ruled that states that with a long history of discrimination, like Texas, no longer have to approve their voting changes with the federal government. The Roberts Court has made it much harder to strike down laws that discriminate against voters of color. And now they are preparing potentially to gut protections that protect people of color from being able to elect candidates of choice. And I think the Texas ruling is a bad sign, another bad sign for the Voting Rights Act, because a lower court found that Texas drew these maps to discriminate against Black and Latino voters, that they specifically targeted districts where Black and Latino voters had elected their candidates of choice. And the Supreme Court said, no, we're okay with doing it. So it was yet another example in which the Supreme Court is choosing to protect white power over the power of Black, Latino, Asian American voters.
So where does this leave the other cases? You have California's Prop 50 to redraw the state's congressional districts. But that was done another way. It was done by a referendum. The people of California voted on it. And then you've got North Carolina. You've got Missouri. Where does this leave everything before next midterm elections?
Yeah, there's a lot of activity in the court so far. A federal court has already upheld North Carolina's map, which was specifically targeted to dismantle a district of a Black Democrat there. The only district they changed was held by a Black Democrat in the state. In Missouri right now, organizers are trying to get signatures for a referendum to be able to block that district, which also targeted the district of a Black Democrat. Emanuel Cleaver, California's law is being challenged by Republicans and by the Justice Department. The Supreme Court did signal, however, in its decision in Texas, that they believe that the California map was also a partisan gerrymander. So that would lead one to believe that if the Supreme Court's going to uphold the Texas map, they would also uphold the California map. We've also seen repeatedly that there's double standards for this court, that they allow Republicans to get away with things that they don't allow Democrats to get away with. They've allowed Trump to get away with things that they did not allow Biden to get away with. But generally speaking, it seems like the Supreme Court is going to allow states to gerrymander as much as they want. And that's going to lead to a situation where American democracy is going to become more rigged and less fair.
Ari Berman, voting rights correspondent for Mother Jones Magazine, author of Minority Rule, The Right-Wing Attack on the Will of the People and the Fight to Resist It. We'll link to your piece, The Roberts Court Just Helped Trump Rig the Midterms. Next up, immigration crackdowns continue nationwide. We'll go to New Orleans, where agents are expected to make 5,000 arrests. And to Minneapolis, as Trump escalates his attacks on the Somali community there, calling the whole community garbage. Stay with us. I Call Out to You, composed by Ahmed Kabour at the outbreak of the Lebanese Civil War in 1975 and performed at a Gaza benefit concert on Wednesday by the NYC Palestinian Youth Choir. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to New Orleans and southeast Louisiana, where more than 250 federal immigration agents launched Operation Catahoula Crunch this week. They reportedly aimed to make more than 5,000 arrests over 2 months. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem says the operational target, quote, the worst of the worst, unquote. But local officials say they're skeptical. City Council member Leslie Harris responded, quote, there are nowhere near 5,000 violent offenders in our region. What we're seeing instead are mothers, teenagers, and workers being detained during routine check-ins from their homes and places of work. So far, agents have targeted the parking lots of home improvement stores like Home Depot and workers at construction sites. At a New Orleans City Council hearing Thursday, about 30 protesters were removed after demanding city leaders do more to protect immigrants, calling for ICE-free zones. In a public comment session, residents went to the microphone one by one and were cut off when it was clear they wanted to talk about immigration, which was not on the formal agenda. This is Mitch Gonzalez of Southeast Dignity Not Detention Coalition. After his mic was cut, he continued to try to be heard.
We delivered a letter to City Council on November 21st. I'm part of the Southeast Dignity Not Detention Coalition. We requested a meeting. This should be on the agenda. It should be on the agenda. Public safety is at
heart. Little kids are not going to school right now. People are not able to take their disabled parents to their medical appointments. Please, I'm begging you. And right now, it's about the safety of the people who live here. But I promise you, in just if these people are planning to stay here for 2 months and take as many as 5,000 of the people who live in the streets.
For more, we're joined by Omedo Lopez, legal director for ISLA, Immigrant Services and Legal Advocacy, based in New Orleans. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Omedo. If you can start off by talking about what exactly you understand this plan is, as they move in 250 immigration agents, they say they're making 5,000 arrests in the next 2 months. What's happening to New Orleans?
Yes, thank you, Amy, for having me on. We have seen the officers come into the city and the surrounding areas as well. And the fact that they're looking for a specific quota, that they have a number that they're going after, makes it clear that they're not targeting, as they claim, the worst of the worst. Instead, they're going to target whoever they can. And as the Supreme Court has unfortunately authorized them, they're using racial profiling as part of that approach.
They're calling it Catahoula Crunch. Louisiana's state dog is the Catahoula. Explain what they're saying here, what Kristi Noem is talking about, who the immigrants are that they're going after.
Yeah, they originally had called it the Swamp Sweep, but I guess they thought SS was a little bit too on the nose, so they went after Catahoula Crunch instead. And what they're saying is they're going to target, you know, folks who have criminal backgrounds, or at least that's the purported position from the higher-ups, at least. There was a video of Bovino recently saying he's going after immigrants. He was asked, who are you targeting? Who are you looking for? And he said, this is an immigration raid. And so they're focusing on immigrants across the board. What we've seen has been folks at work, folks at their check-ins, people around schools, ICE officers setting up around, or CBP officers setting up around the schools. And the fear that's being the fear that's coming into the being sowed in the community is really the true intent of what their operation here.
Catahoula Crunch, named after the Louisiana state dog. Didn't Homeland Secretary Kristi Noem famously shoot her dog?
That is a story that's come out, yes.
Many ICE officials who now work at the national level came up through Louisiana. Is that right? Can you talk about them and who are the hundreds of agents moved in to do these arrests?
Yeah, Louisiana's playing a oversized role when it comes to immigration enforcement throughout the country. The former Wildlife and Fisheries Secretary here in Louisiana is now one of the deputy director of ICE nationally. Our former area New Orleans ICE director, field office director, is also at headquarters. There are various deportation officers here from Louisiana who have gone to work at headquarters. And so the approach that they used to take, or that they have taken in Louisiana since 2014, to incarcerate as many people as possible, quickly deport, warehouse and deport people from